Hello, welcome everyone to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on JTS Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world with transformational businesses, thoughts, ideas, and actions that encourage and inspire. My name is Taylor Tagg. I am a forgiveness coach certified by the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training and a certified Napoleon Hill Foundation leadership instructor. I teach people precisely how to let go of hurt and resentments, both big and small, releasing emotional pain and suffering to experience lasting peace, freedom, and inner success. Find out more about my work and my latest book, The Path to a Peaceful Heart, please visit me at TheEvolvingHeart.com and sign up for my monthly newsletter. I'm also writing a new book with certified Napoleon Hill instructors Tom Cunningham and Tim Chim on lessons from adversity and defeat to be published this fall. Let me check out more about the Triple T team at adversityanddefeat.com. And now to today's success story. My guest today is Kathy Story. And Kathy is a consultant, facilitator, and a coach with over 25 years of experience in law, education, and counseling. She works with state and local bar associations, court systems, CLE regulators, law firms, law schools, and other organizations to improve practice and satisfaction in the legal profession and the courts. Her coaching program for individual attorneys is approved for CLE credit by the state of Tennessee. Her specialties are leadership programs, individual coaching, train-the-trainer workshops, immunity-to-change seminars, strength-based strategic planning, emotional intelligence, and professional satisfaction and resilience. Now, Kathy's joining us on Journey to Success Radio today to talk about the concept of resilience and how we can have more resilience in our careers and our relationships. So, Kathy, welcome to Journey to Success Radio. How are you today?
Thank you, Taylor. I'm doing very well today, and I'm just so pleased to be with you.
Well, thank you for joining us. I know this is a very special conversation. In a few minutes, we're going to get into the concept of resilience and what that means and how we can maybe apply it to our lives in a little bit better way. But first of all, kind of tell our listeners what your background is and how you got into consulting and facilitating for attorneys in the legal system.
All right. Well, I started out going to college and ended up majoring in psychology and sociology and very interested in, you know, people and relationships and how that all works out. Got a master's in educational psychology with an emphasis on counseling and particularly working with college students. And I had the opportunity at the University of Nebraska to work in a very developmental residence hall program that was trying to think about how do we create environments on a college campus that allow students really to thrive. And so this was way back in the 70s, long before the start of positive psychology in the 90s. But we were doing positive psychology back then. We were really thinking about it from a kind of a college student development, student services perspective, but that approach of, you know, how do we create activities, physical environments, services, programs where students can really thrive and be at their best and find out who they are and what their talents and strengths and skills are to contribute to the world. And so that was a real exciting time in my life. And I went on to work at several universities in career counseling and, pre-med advising and student services and different things. And then at some point really decided I was very interested in the political process, not in getting involved in politics, but in making, affecting change in society through legislation and through different kinds of things. And so decided I needed to go to law school. Ended up going to law school and did work for a judge, practiced with a law firm, did litigation, complex commercial litigation. But the law school experience for me was very alienating. I tell people it was 3 years of soul sucking. I had been in a wonderful developmental master's of counseling program at the University of Nebraska, and, you know, small cohort, we really got to know each other. We really cared about each other. We cared about each other's resilience. We cared about each other's personal and professional development. And law school had none of that. And I practiced at a firm here in Memphis, wonderful people. I loved them so much. They were great mentors, but that adversarial, constantly fighting, constantly trying to figure out how to undermine the other person's position, that just didn't work for me at all. And I was at a low point in my resilience after 3 years of law school and practicing law for about 6 or 7 years. I knew I really had to make a change, and so found an opportunity to go back to the university setting and work in student affairs as a legal advisor and got very involved in student leadership initiatives. And again, thinking about how do we create processes and environments on a college campus that really allow people to thrive. Then I had the opportunity to work in a program that did the same thing for judges. You know, how do we create educational opportunities for judges where they can really thrive, they can become more resilient, they can be concerned about their own personal and professional development. And we, the byword there was promoting justice through professional development. Because if the people that are doing the job, the really tough job of either being a lawyer or being a judge, aren't thriving themselves and aren't resilient themselves, it is really hard to dispense true justice. Because to be able to hold that space where there's always conflict and people in a lot of difficulties. And, you know, when you're an attorney or a judge, what you see is people in crisis all the time. And so in doing that work and listening to judges' stories and knowing a lot of attorneys, I thought there is a great need here to bring this message of resilience, this message of how do we thrive as people. You know, knowing that relationships are so important, knowing that we have to take care of ourselves physically and spiritually and emotionally and mentally. You know, how do we do that? And I became really fascinated by concept of resilience. So I knew I needed it personally in my life. You know, every time, you know, you go through another point in your life where there's a transition, you need to be sure you're taking care of yourself at that point. But I realized also that as a profession, lawyers and judges really needed resilience.
Absolutely. And that's a great point. And we're going to talk about resilience here in just a minute and get into the conversation about that. And I think that's really important because we do see in business, in the legal profession, we see people in crisis. We see conflict everywhere we turn. And it's just, it's almost, it can be overwhelming. It can be overwhelming. And so, let's give our listeners, I guess, could you give us a working definition of what does it mean to be resilient? What does that mean for maybe a person working in business or in their career?
Okay. So we're resilient if we can really thrive in the face of adversity and we can bounce back from life's trauma, whether trauma is a little t, you know, I understand that. Coming back from Nashville last night, you had a blowout on the interstate. Well, that's a little bit of trauma. It totally disrupts what we were planning to do. That was probably a little frightening for a minute, and it's like, how are we going to resolve this? So there's the kind of little trauma, but then there's also the big trauma that we have in our life, kind of capital T trauma. But all of this adversity, if we are able to successfully adapt to disruptions in our life equilibrium and to thrive in the face of adversity, that's resilience. And it's a multidimensional characteristic. It's, I mean, we are embodied, right? So it's biological and physical. It has psychological and emotional aspects that have a lot to do with relationships. It has mental aspects that have to do with, you know, kind of always be learning more. And it has spiritual aspects that have to do with meaning and purpose in our lives and finding a way to use our strengths for some cause that's greater than ourselves. And so that's kind of the working definition of resilience that comes out of the psychological literature on this.
Well, and that's a good point, too. I think the term bouncing back is a really key term. Getting up in what seems to be a very difficult situation or a situation where there doesn't seem to be a solution or a way out is very important. So, can you talk a little bit more about maybe the various components of resilience? When I think of resilience, it means to get up again, but maybe for some people it means to toughen up, you know, get hard, you know, get strong. And that's not necessarily maybe what it's all about. So give us a little bit better idea of what that is.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting that kind of toughening up. I mean, you know, that saying, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And there is some truth in that, because what we know about people who are resilient is that they can often talk about increased resilience after some disruption in their life. And the literature calls that actually post-traumatic growth. And we know that there's more post-traumatic growth than there is post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, post-traumatic stress disorder is really out there, and I had the privilege of working with the Army for 2 years through the University of Pennsylvania's Resilience Program, and yes, there is post-traumatic stress disorder, and we need to provide services for those people, but a lot of those sergeants who are working as non-commissioned officers could really talk about how a disruption in their life had caused them to become more resilient, because it helped them understand what was really important in their life. It brought them to focus, the relationships that really mattered to them. It showed them strengths they didn't know that they could possibly have. You know, it really put them on a course of, wow, this has been really hard, but out of this, I have a new clarity about what my purpose is in life. So, you know, that, if that's what you mean by hardness, that sense of now I really get it. I'm clear about what's important in my life. I'm clear about the relationships I need to spend time on. I'm clear about that I have these strengths and these capacities that I didn't know I had in the past. That's real important. But I think the one big thing that we know about resilience is that relationships matter. Above all else, relationships matter. So if strong means I can do it all on my own, no. If strong means I am so strong and so confident that I can ask others for help, yes. And so that's the key, I think, to being resilient, is to understand that, yes, we have these internal strengths, these internal capacities, but also we are connected, that we need to be connected to other people, and we need to rely upon other people, and we need to offer them help and ask them for help. And so that's a key part of resilience.
Well, that's a great point, Kathy, and I appreciate you saying that. Relationships do matter. They really do. And for us to rely on other people to help us through whatever adversities or defeats or whatever we're working through is very important. I want to ask you a question, because there's, you know, in my forgiveness work, which is very closely related to resilience and the ability to bounce back and to let go of the things that you know, we need to let go of, There's one word that I changed in my own life that helped me bounce back from all the difficulties that I experienced, and it was changing the word T-O, that things were happening to me, into F-O-R, things were happening for me, to be able to teach me some of the lessons that I really needed to learn. So how does a concept like that, of things happening for you, fit into the model of resilience?
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think, boy, that fits into so many models. I work some in restorative justice also, and there's a real difference between doing things to people or for people or with people. And I think that if you always feel like things are happening to you and you don't have any control, then that can really get you down. And the model that I work with that I've developed by combining the work of a couple of different entities, and I can talk a little bit more about that, but one aspect that's very important is positive framing. And positive framing is not, you know, positive thinking where you replace a negative thought with a positive thought, but positive framing is really adopting a more constructive way to view the world. So it's not ignoring the realities. It's not like you're ignoring all those bad things, but it's you look at it and you counter it with action. So, you know, and doing this, like looking at reality, being really willing to accept reality, but to look to see where you have some control in it, and where you have some control in it is how you construe it, you know, the meaning that you make out of it. And if you can use positive framing, it actually expands your horizons and it increases resilience, because you can move forward even in hard times. So if you have what is termed in the literature an optimistic explanatory style, And an explanatory style is kind of your habitual way of explaining the good and bad things in your life. So if you have that optimistic explanatory style, you actually see life more realistically than persons with a pessimistic explanatory style, because you're confident that you can manage the challenges. So you can accept the facts as they are, but you can then move to action. And what people who have this optimistic explanatory style, they find meaning in their failures. In fact, if you talk to leaders, and if you look at the work of Bill George in Authentic Leadership, what he found is that people found the authentic leaders that he knew about, that they were able to find real meaning in their failures and their setbacks, and to use them as learning opportunities. And so instead of thinking all these things are happening to me, they could step back from those failures and setbacks and say, what am I learning here? You know, what can I learn from this? And it was often in those times of really difficult circumstances that Bill George talks about the crucibles in your life, that you get real clarity about what your life path is and what your leadership should be. So that it's those events that most inspire and motivate authentic leaders. And so the work that I do with resilience is also as a model for leadership. You know, I mean, we're people, right? And I found it so amazing in your book, The Path to a Peaceful Heart, that on page 59, you talk about the heart-centered system is about regaining mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. And when I just read you the definition of resilience, that's included, right? I mean, that's the kind of things we're talking about. So, you know, whether you're looking at it through the lens of forgiveness or the lens through leadership or the lens for resilience, we know that it's multidimensional, it's multi-characteristic, and we have to be thinking about a spiritually, physically, emotionally, and mentally. And that mental part is that positive framing, that we can, you know, look at things more positively. And actually, when we have a positive stand, when we can actually are experiencing positive emotions, when we engage in positive training, we broaden our outlook. And Barbara Fredrickson at the University of North Carolina has done a lot of work on this. And she says that positivity broadens up your outlook. It literally expands your mindscape, bringing new possibilities into view. And her theory of broaden and build is that for a long time, we didn't understand why we have positive emotions. We understood why we have negative emotions, because that's how we survived, right? We have the brains of ancestors who have really attended to fear and attended to anxiety and attended to all of those, and anger, so those negative emotions. And so for a long time, researchers were saying, well, why do we even have positive emotions? You know, what's the benefit to that? But her theory found that positive emotions broaden our perspective in this way, that we see new connections, we see possibilities that we didn't see otherwise, and it builds relationships. So if we're experiencing positive emotions, literally we have more peripheral vision in a literal sense and in a metaphorical sense, and we are building relationships with other people. And as I said before, the bottom line on resilience is that relationships matter. So, you know, that change in that idea of things are happening to me as things are happening for me, or things are happening and I am making my meaning out of it, and I know I can face it confidently no matter what the facts are, because even if there's just one little thing that I can take control of and move forward on, there's only one action item in this whole thing, then I can look at it that way and I can have a more constructive view of the world. So that's a long answer to your question, Taylor, but I am right there with you on that.
And I appreciate that answer too, Kathy, because I think it's really important, you know, at least from my own perspective in dealing with adversity and the ability to bounce back, to make sense of what seemingly is so monumental and huge in your life through a difficult adversity, is the ability to change the content of my life, because everybody's got content, right? Everybody's getting difficulties and problems and situations to deal with. It was the ability to change the content into context that meant something different, an understanding that was never there before, the ability to see a situation differently, that it was happening for me to learn something important that I needed to learn, rather than just something that I had to another something I had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so it was the ability to change that content into context that worked for me rather than against me.
Yeah, and I think
you're right ahead.
Then the when we look at the characteristics of resilient people, one of them is that they really view change or stress as a challenge or opportunity, and that they can demonstrate adaptability when dealing with change. You know, we all have great changes in our lives, and some are positive and some are negative. And even when we have a lot of great positive change, it can still get pretty stressful because it is change, and that's hard. And when we think about the Chinese character for crisis, it's actually two different characters. They write it with two characters. One means danger, and one means opportunity. And so we don't ignore the danger in a crisis. I mean, we have to take care of ourselves. We have to, deal with that. But then how can we see the opportunity in the crisis? And, certainly in your book, as you explained, you had a crisis in your childhood, in your adolescence, that hopefully for most of our listeners is far greater trauma than any of them had to deal with. But, many people have these kind of childhood traumas or traumas in their adult life. And, your book about understanding that the forgiveness part of that is so key. So actually another characteristic of resilient people is that they practice forgiveness and they express gratitude. And so that forgiveness and gratitude are hallmarks of resilience also. And so I think that, again, the resilience and the forgiveness are interrelated. And, yes, people who have gone through trauma, they need to deal with that however they can, whether they're in therapy, whether they have the opportunity to participate in some of the programs that you participated in and now offer for others. But even folks who don't have that big trauma with a capital T, our lives are just really stressful. Our lives are coming at us a million miles a minute, and they're very complex. And as in the words of Bob Keegan, one of the theorists I really enjoy a lot, and I do his immunity to change work, as he says, we are in over our heads. The mental demands of modern life, really, we kind of feel like we're in over our heads all the time. And that's why it's also important that we think about resilience and keep ourselves resilient. Even if we're not dealing with huge change or not dealing with, trauma with capital T, sometimes in our lives, between relationships and career and what's happening in the world, we almost feel like we're in over our heads. And so we need to keep focused on our own resilience. And I think this might be kind of a good time to transition into kind of what I see as the five different parts of resilience and the kind of ways that I help people think about those and work on them. Does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah, that sounds great, Kathy. And I want you, maybe you incorporate into your five components. You just hit on a really, really, I think, important aspect of many of our listeners. They feel like they're just in overwhelm and too much to deal with relationships, business careers, getting it all done. And I think many people feel that way. So if you could hit on that topic in your five components, that would be great.
Great. Okay. Well, I always like to start with resilience, really talking about, what I think is so important is meaning, finding meaning in our lives. And let me just give a little bit of background. And the model that I've developed really has been influenced by the research of the McKinsey Group and particularly Barsh and Cranston and their work when they looked at, they did a very in-depth study at great leaders and found out what made for really resilient, thriving leaders. And then also the work of Lohr and Schwartz. They have a book called The Power of Full Engagement and how managing your energy, not managing your time, is what really counts. And they have a nice Harvard Business Review article called The Corporate Athlete. But in looking at both the leadership model and this kind of managing corporate athlete model, there's five factors that really come out: finding meaning, managing your energy, connecting, that kind of relationship piece, the positive framing, and the engagement. And so the one where all change comes from is finding meaning. That, you know, no matter what kind of change we want to bring about in our life, if we can't find where it connects to our greater purpose, you know, where we see our serving some inspiring purpose, we're not going to bring about change in our life. And if we can get our purpose straight and know what our signature strengths are and put them to work in the service of that higher purpose, then that is going to really clear the way for so many things, because then every decision in our life we can go back to that meaning. Is this in line with how I use my signature strengths on behalf of a purpose that's greater than myself? And so when we get to thinking about things even like time management, you know, if we can come back to this higher order of meaning, then it's so important. And this really is the spiritual component of resilience. And so, you know, if we have a sense that we're contributing to something bigger than ourselves, then we have meaning in our life. And, you know, resilient people are really goal-oriented, but those goals have to be authentic goals. They have to be their own intrinsic self-determined goals based on them knowing what their signature strengths are and putting those strengths to work, you know, for this greater purpose. And so a real big important part of any kind of resilience when you start down that path is self-awareness. Self-awareness is, if you ask a lot of leaders in the field, they will say self-awareness for leadership, whether that's leadership of your family or in your faith community or in your community, your professional community, the most important capability for a leader to develop is self-awareness. And a lot of people don't take time to work on that, but we really need to have a sense of what is important to me in my life and what are my signature strengths, what are the things that when I'm doing them, I really feel true to myself, that I can't help but use those strengths, that the motivation to use them is intrinsic, and that I feel energized when I use them. So an example of signature strength, I mean, there's lots of different, you know, as you know, I'm sure, a lot of different strength models out there. The one that I use is Values in Action. It looks at character strengths, and it has 24 strengths that have been valued by all cultures through all time. And one of them is love of learning, and that's a real strong character strength for a lot of attorneys, love of learning. So how can they, in their work, really think about how am I using that signature strength of love and learning on a regular basis? Because when we're working from our signature strengths, whether they're kindness or they are appreciation of beauty and excellence or they are perseverance or a signature strength of hope and optimism or a signature strength of bravery, if we are working out our signature strength, it is really going to energize us. And if we're using that signature strength on behalf of some purpose that we value very much, then we're going to have that meaning in our life that's so important. And so, you know, that's the first thing. And I think it's so important in this work that, you know, we start with that we find meaning in our work. And a lot of times when people find that meeting, that sweet spot where they realize they're using their signature strengths on behalf of this greater purpose, that concern about being in over their head starts to clear, because they see the things that they're doing engaged in that aren't important to them. And the places where they're not using their signature strengths, we feel really depleted and burned out when we don't have opportunities to use our signature strengths in our work and other points in our life. So we get a lot of clarity. And yeah, we're still being tested, you know, every day and pushed every day, but we have a lot more energy to do that. And we have a sense of purpose greater than ourselves. And so we're able to push past that feeling of just being overwhelmed, because you're overwhelmed when you don't know what you're working towards. And if you can always have a sense of what you're working towards and using your strength, some of that feeling of being overwhelmed will pass. And so the second thing about feeling that you're being overwhelmed is that we have to take care of ourselves in terms of our physical bodies, and that's really that managing energy component. So, you know, the secret, I think, to success, as Marcus Buckingham said, the secret to lasting success, whether it's individually or organizationally, lies in how we manage our energy. So we need to know, again, where our energy comes from, where it goes, and what we can do to manage it. And so the key here is not so much time management, because that's 24/7, we can't control that, But what we can control is the quality and quantity of energy that we bring to our lives, to our projects. And so we're really trying to balance energy flow here. And if we expend a lot of energy on something, then we need to stop and refuel ourselves and regain our energy. And so, again, this concept of self-awareness plays in so much that we have to know what our energy sources are and our energy sappers, particularly in the work we do. It doesn't matter what you do. If you're an entrepreneur, you know, your energy source may be when you're out there telling people your elevator speech and getting people excited about what you do, and the energy sapper may be when you have to sit down and do your paperwork, you know. But we have to know what our energy sources and sappers are and to think about how we can go about our work using our signature strengths, because that's going to give us a lot of energy, and how we can space out activities in the day so that we're expending energy and we're regaining energy, and we're expending energy and regaining energy. And part of that regaining energy is knowing what activities we can engage in that really restore our energy. And the most important concept here is fit, because sometimes people feel like, oh, I don't want to, you know, they choose a restorative activity like running that isn't a good fit with, for them. Like I tell people, I only run when somebody's chasing me. Running is like painful to me. It's physically painful, but it's like energy depleting. You know, for some people, running is the most wonderful thing in the world, and they get all sorts of energy, and they get in flow. And after they're done running, they have this energy burst, and they have all this creative and problem-solving things, because we know from physical energy, our brains for 12 hours are transformed, and our best ideas and our most creative work and problem-solving can come from that point. But running for me is awful, but I love to dance. So for me, dancing is a great fit. For other people, dancing would be torture, you know, looking at total strangers dancing, you know, who wants to do that? So if we can find those restorative activities that are really great fit for us, then that's going to be such an important part of not feeling overwhelmed, because we're going to literally change our brains and give our bodies more energy and give our brain what they need to be able to focus, to be able to be creative, to, you know, be able to problem solve, and to really do hard critical thinking. And so managing our energy, and, you know, it's all the things, you know, we read about all the time, but it's hard to do. It's really thinking about diet, thinking about having good sleep habits, thinking about taking time to breathe and engaging in deep breathing, because we know after only 3 deep breaths from the belly that we can actually lower our heart rates and lower our blood pressure. So it's all those things we know about managing energy, but sometimes we don't do because we don't think we have time, or we don't, you know, we think they're almost selfish, like taking time for yourself for restorative activity, particularly if you're a working parent, almost seems like selfish. But we have to remind ourselves, it's just like, you know, when we're in the airplane, and the reason you put your mask on first and then put it on the child beside you is because you got to take care of yourself first before you can take care of all the important people in your life and before you can take care of your business. And so if we can think about, I am taking care of my energy, I am eating well, I'm getting enough sleep, you know, I'm engaging in the restorative activities, whether it's yoga or socializing or centering prayer, whatever it may be, I'm doing these things not just for me, but I'm doing them for me because I need to then go out and put my work in this purpose that's greater than myself. And so that, you know, that's one way to think about it. And then I've already talked about the positive framing, about how important that can be. And the fourth aspect then is the connecting, is the relationships. And the relationships are so key because, boy, all of, really a lot of the most important things that bring meaning in our life are relationships. And relationships are going to bring us that meaning in our life. They're going to fill us in important ways, and they're going to, you know, really create trusting, connected work environments. So we spend so much time at work, and we need to have great relationships at work, as well as those kind of strong, positive relationships with friends, in our families. And sometimes our families aren't the families we were born into, but the families that we create for ourselves, because maybe we couldn't find it, what we needed in the family we were born into. But then we can create families and friendships circles that can bring us that important relationship. And, you know, when you do polls, when I think when different organizations do polls, they find that the four major sources of life satisfaction are all relationships. And that if you look at the research on happiness, that about 70% of happiness that's controllable, there's some happiness that's uncontrollable because it's genetic, and there's some happiness that's uncontrollable because bad things happen to us. But a large part of happiness is under our control, and 70% of that has to do with relationships. So relationships are so important. And again, that going back to that concept of feeling like we're in over our heads, if we are in relationships where people are supportive to us and we can go to them for help because we're feeling like we're in over our heads, because we know that they can come to us for help later when we're when they're feeling over their heads, you know, in over their heads. So that is so key. And so to have that supportive relationship, almost a supportive network of people who are going to tell you the truth, they're going to be there for you, but they're going to be honest with you, and they're going to say, hey, you know what? What you've been doing now, this is not in connection with your greater purpose. This doesn't use your signature strengths. This is not who you really are. You need to get focused back on, you know, that kind of feedback is so important to have relationships like that. So, again, it comes back to this. We feel in over our heads, but that's going to be buffered if we've got a support network, if we've got people that we trust, the people that trust us, people we can ask for help from, people who can come at other times and ask us for help. And so there's a lot of different ways of thinking about relationships, but it just comes back to having a supportive network. And that's personal and that's professional. I hope that all of our listeners can think about someone who's a mentor in their life. And I think that you know, your own life process, as you've written about it, Taylor, in your book, and the people that mentored you, including a relative who was a priest who was so helpful to you at different times. And so I hope everybody's listening can go back and say, oh, this teacher, this early boss, this relative in my life was really a mentor, because those relationships are so important too. And then the final part of the model of resilience I work from is really engagement. And that's where we, you know, take ownership of opportunities. We were talking about that before, you know, really seeing that in every crisis or predicament, there's the opportunity in there, and taking ownership of that and engaging the world with positivity, that kind of broadening and building that a positive framework brings us. And Bob Keegan says that, you know, we talk about burnout a lot, and he's a professor at Harvard, and he says that burnout is bureaucracies for depression, and that it occurs when we lose touch with our own personal and professional development. And so I applaud people who go into seek coaching or seek psychotherapy or going to different kinds of programs where they're really working on their own personal and professional development, because they are at that point avoiding burnout, or they are building up their resilience, and they are you know, taking care of themselves in ways that are going to help them not feel like they're so much in over their heads. And I think one way that we can think about engagement is that we make day-to-day decisions that are in line with our long-term goals. And only if we've taken the time to figure out what the meaning is of our life and where we can use our signature strengths and what our greater purpose is, do we have opportunities on a day-to-day basis to make decisions in line with that. And when those day-to-day decisions are in line with our long-term goals, our own authentic and intrinsic goals based upon knowing ourselves, then we don't feel so overwhelmed. Then we can say, oh, those things there that I thought I had to do, you know, I don't have to do those, because they're not in line with what is really important to me. I can learn to say no to people and help them find somebody else who's going to help them out in that way. But I can say no to people when it's not in line with what is true to me, because if it's really what's true to me, then I'm going to be on fire. And what the world needs are people who are on fire and the people who say, wow, this is so important to me, and I'm using my signature strengths here, and, you know, I'm out there. And so that's the model of resilience that I use, the thinking about meaning in our life, thinking about managing energy, positive framing, connecting through relationship and engagement, you know, really taking ownership of opportunities and being willing to take some risks because we have the confidence that we can move through those hard times if there are hard times and get to the other side.
Absolutely. I appreciate you giving us this model because it's a great model, and it speaks a lot to our ability to work through our issues and our problems and bounce back. I mean, this is resilience. This is how to get back up and continue moving and rely on our networks and the people to help us to do that. So before we go any further, Kathy, and we conclude this interview here in just a few minutes, for people who want to engage you and do more work with you, I know you do seminars, chain seminars, strategic planning and coaching and such. Tell the listeners how they can get in touch with you and engage you.
Well, the best way to contact me really is either by phone or by email. My email address is kathystoryconsulting@gmail.com, and that's kathystory consulting, all one word, @gmail.com. And then my phone number is 901-849-4680. And I do workshops. I do everything from 1 hour events to multi-day events and retreats around this resilience program and around the concept of change. And I work with all sorts of professional groups, of course. Because I'm a lawyer, my main client group is attorneys and judges. But I've also worked with nonprofit groups. I've worked with leaders in industry. I've worked with entrepreneurs. I work with all groups. And I also do individual coaching. And I'm located here in Memphis, Tennessee. And so if you're here in the Mid-South area, I do one-on-one coaching at an office I have. But I also do consultations and coaching over the phone and by Skype. And again, the best ways to reach me would be kathystoryconsulting@gmail.com or my phone number, 901-849-4680.
Well, wonderful. And I encourage all the listeners who want to engage Kathy and learn more about her work and her work in resilience, which I think is a major benefit for anyone who's in business or in a leadership position or even just trying to develop their own life to bounce back, to be resilient and put this model to work will go a long, long way. So, Kathy, we have covered a lot of information here about the concept of resilience and what it means to bounce back and be that kind of person. So as we kind of wrap up the interview here, what is it? What are a couple of main components that you want to leave our listeners with? What does it mean to be resilient and bounce back? And what are maybe one or two things they can do right now to begin walking on that journey?
Well, great question. Well, I think what it really means is that you spend some time with self-awareness in figuring out, you know, what your purpose is and what your signature strengths are. What are the things you're really good at and things that you feel good while you're doing it and how you can use that on behalf of that greater purpose. And then just knowing how important relationships are. I think relationships are really the key. And other thing I really want to stress with people is that all of this resilience is something you can learn. And there's many different training programs out there on resilience. There are skills that you can develop. There are exercises you can do. There's things that you can engage in every category of resilience to boost you. And one thing I would say to everybody right now who's listening, if you haven't done something today that's a restorative activity for you, whether that's, you know, going out in nature because there's incredible restorative aspects of nature or calling a friend that always gives you great energy, that gives you the opportunity to kind of recharge or spending time in meditation or centering prayer, whatever it is that is a restorative activity that fits good for you. When you get finished listening to this, go do that and see how it really changes how you're feeling and helps you move to that point of resilience and bouncing back.
Well, Kathy, I want to thank you for joining us today. I mean, this has been a great conversation about resilience and the ability to bounce back, and I think a lot of listeners will really benefit from this. and your work too. So again, we want to thank you for joining us today. And we want to tell everybody that again, you're listening to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Find out more about our network, visit us at journeytosuccessradio.com. And we'll see you soon for our next amazing success story. Bye for now.